WNYC Studios is supported by the Brennan Center for Justice, presenting The Failed Experiment of Mass Incarceration. This virtual event on Wednesday, April 17th at 3 p.m. will feature criminal justice advocates and contributors to the new book, Excessive Punishment: How the Justice System Creates Mass Incarceration. They will discuss why the American approach to criminal justice is so punitive and how reforms would prioritize human dignity and restoration over retribution. Find more information and register for this event at brennancenter.org/events. WNYC Studios is supported by the Public Theater, presenting the world premiere of Jordans, a new play by Ife Olujobi about two young Black colleagues forced together and torn apart by their race, ambition, and otherworldly circumstances. Directed by Whitney White, begins April 11th. Learn more at publictheater.org.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and look at what this morning's papers are saying about the new Speaker of the New York City Council, Christine Quinn. The Daily News today has an article headlined, Quinn, Bloomy, a Happy Couple, about their political honeymoon now lasting the full 100 days since Quinn became Speaker. Pretty different from the mayor's relationship with the last Speaker, Gifford Miller, remember him? Or even Rudy Giuliani's relationship with Speaker Peter Vallone. And the New York Post editorial page today calls Quinn's new budget proposals hardly horrendous, which I guess is as good as it gets between the Post and leaders of the Democratic Party. So who is this Christine Quinn? And can the first lesbian council speaker really have a honeymoon with a hetero mayor, Mike? With us now for her first time as speaker is Councilwoman Christine Quinn, whose district covers Greenwich Village, the Flatiron District, Midtown, Soho, and that part of the West Side known as Chelsea Clinton. That's Chelsea Dash Clinton. Hi, should I call you Madam Speaker now?
You should call me Chris.
All right. Well, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
You know, before we talk about these tabloid stories, let's talk a little bit about you, because a lot of New Yorkers still don't know you yet as a citywide figure. So who is Christine Quinn? Where did you grow up? Who are your parents?
Well, I grew up on Long Island in Glen Cove. My folks and all four of my grandparents were New York City residents, and my mom and dad, when they had my sister, who's 10 years older than I am, when she was two, they moved out to Long Island. So although I was raised on Long Island, since all four of my grandparents were in the city and my folks had been raised here, we thought of ourselves as New Yorkers. And my dad is now back in the city on the Upper West Side, spending most of his time volunteering for me in my office.
How'd you first become political?
You know, it's funny. As a kid, I remember it was the only thing that I was interested in. You know, when you went to the school library and they said, pick out a book, I only ever picked out the biographies of political figures. My mom had been a social worker for Catholic Charities before she had my sister. And my dad was an electrical engineer, but was a shop steward in his union and was very involved in that. And as a kid, I remember saying, you know, he would tell us that one of the only ways you could get into heaven is if you always voted Democratic. So I think all of those things converged together and created a big political interest very early on for me.
What did you do before being elected to city council?
Right before being elected to the city council, I was had the hardest job I've ever had. I was the executive director of a small nonprofit. I was the director of the New York City Gay and Lesbian Anti-Violence Project, which is a crime victims assistance agency. And before that, I had been my predecessor's chief of staff, and before that, a tenant and housing organizer.
Your predecessor in that district was?
Tom Duane, who's now a member of the state senate.
And what do you consider your greatest accomplishment to date, in or out of elected office, for people you represent?
The best thing I ever did was when I was working with Tom Duane in 1993. Mayor Giuliani had just been elected. He wanted to wholesale eliminate the Division of AIDS Services, a very important part of city government, which helps homeless people with AIDS get housing, get financial assistance. And Tom and I, in a huge community response, we were able to beat that back and preserve the Division of Services, and it exists today doing a great job helping homeless people with AIDS.
The new city council speaker, Christine Quinn, my guest here on WNYC. So would you call it a 100-day honeymoon with the mayor, as the Daily News does today?
You know, I would say that the first 100 days have been very productive, that the mayor and I have really been able to work together. We were able to, with my colleagues, find a compromise on the Educational Equity Act that allows parents for whom English isn't their first language to find a way to become involved in their kids' schools, which is so important.
That was the translation of more Education Department documents?
Exactly, exactly. We had passed a bill. The mayor had vetoed it. It looked like it was going to be a big back-and-forth battle. And what we were able to do is the mayor didn't want it to be a bill. We wanted it to happen. We changed the chancellor's regulations. It has the same force of law. So we were able to focus on the goal of making our schools better by getting parents involved. You know, the mayor and I have worked very closely so far on trying to reform lobbying in the city of New York to make sure that we have the strongest ethical infrastructure possible in the city of New York so we never have what happened in Washington have here. So, you know, honeymoon, I don't know that I'd characterize it as that. I would characterize it as a really productive first 100 days. You know, it's a little troubling in some ways that we're so focused on this in the city on whether or not the mayor and the speaker are battling. You know, do they agree? Do they not agree? You know, the mayor and I are not over the next 4 years going to agree all the time. That is 100% true. But we are both very committed to government and very committed to helping New Yorkers and committed to making sure that we work together. You know, New York is like a battle, a big fight, and I think the mayor are going to do our best not to give them that.
Now, one thing a speaker does is to propose an alternative budget to the mayors each year, and you released your first one of these on Thursday. The new fiscal year starts on July 1st,
yes.
So this is the negotiating period. And that's exactly what has the papers cooing about a city hall love nest, and the New York Post calling you, quote, hardly horrendous. Given your activist background on housing and other issues, do you want to be seen as hardly horrendous by the Post editorial page?
Well, you know, that is high praise, having gotten that out of the New York Post. And they called me classy a couple weeks ago. I think I probably need to resign now. I've hit the apex of where I'm going to go. You know, what the Post commented on, I think, was the fact that we in the council in our budget release tried to be fiscally prudent. You know, we are lucky we have a surplus right now. But you can't just, when you have a surplus, decide to spend it all. That's just not wise. So what I talked about in there was, yes, adding some money for really important initiatives like universal pre-kindergarten and efforts to reduce hunger in the city. But we demonstrated restraint. You know, we supported the mayor's call for a healthcare trust fund and added money to the budget. The amount we added was the least that any council has ever proposed to add to a budget. Now, there are new needs and growing needs in the city, so we respected those and responded to those. But you have to realize that we are still talking about big deficits in the future years, and we can't pretend this surplus is a mandate for massively expanding government. We don't, unfortunately, have the resources to do that.
Are you trying to establish centrist credibility now to get something more activist accomplished later?
You know, what I'm trying to do is, you know, I was in the city council after September 11th, and obviously that was an incredibly, unbelievably difficult time for the city. And one of the things we had to do was cut back programs, you know, immediately after September 11th, because we didn't really have enough of a cushion built into the budget to carry us through those tough days. So centrist activists, you know, I'm trying to make sure to learn from that very difficult experience to make sure that we have the cushions we need for the future.
You do have some differences with the mayor in this budget, and
yeah,
perhaps the biggest one has to do with all day pre-K and funding for that. What did you propose there?
We proposed to add $45 million to the budget this year and similar amounts, a total of $135 million in total when you get to fiscal year 09. You know, study after study show clearly that the best way you can help kids succeed in school is to take half a day pre-kindergarten and make it full day. Then they have a full day experience for a year. So when they get to kindergarten and first grade, they're really able to hit the ground running. In addition, if you're a single parent or both parents work, half day pre-care leaves you still having to put your kids somewhere else for the rest of the day. So I really want over the next 4 years for us to move to take the 40,000 pre-kindergarten slots in the city that the Department of Education runs and make them full day. If we do that, we will clearly see our kids succeed and do better in elementary school. In the end, we'll save money because we'll need less remedial work for kids in elementary school. But, you know, we've talked so much about getting money from Albany for the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, and the mayor and Shelley Silver deserve a tremendous amount of praise for finally starting to get that done. But we can't hold kids accountable with all of these tests they now take if we're not going to prepare them. And all evidence shows this is the best thing we can do to prepare kids and will help working families.
City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, my guest on WNYC. Why did you propose longer pre-K for those already in the program rather than more half-day slots so more kids can go? You know, we have such a big shortage of pre-K seats.
You know, I think we need to embrace the best practices we can in city government. We need to set the highest standards. It is clear that full-day pre-kindergarten is so much better than half-day. So what we need to do is move to expanding full-day pre-kindergarten. And as we get spots up to full, then make sure all of the new ones we bring online are full day as well. We need to get away from replicating programs that aren't the best just because they're there.
You also propose tax cuts,
yes,
for small businesses and manufacturers. So you're a tax-cutting Democrat.
You know, I just came from the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce, and what we hope to do in the council is really do everything we can to support small businesses so they can start and grow here in the city. And, you know, there's particular types of small businesses called S corporations. The state and the federal government, and I hope not to follow the lead of the state and federal government all that much, but they did have the wisdom to know that small S corporations should be buffered from taxes, should be saved from some of the tax burdens that appropriately larger companies pay. In the city, we had the wisdom of taxing these S corporations not once, but twice. Now, these tax breaks we need will have to come from Albany. So realistically, we may not get them all by July, but we are committed over the next year after that to work to get the tax release these small companies need and to get particular assistance for manufacturing companies in the city so we can help them stabilize and hopefully grow.
Let me ask you about two other businesses in the city, the New York Yankees and the New York Mets. You were perhaps best known before becoming speaker for leading the charge against a West Side Stadium last year because it would harm the quality of life of the people of your district on the West Side. But now you're supporting the new Yankee Stadium despite what the people of that neighborhood seem to want. How come?
Well, you know, the situation on the West Side and the situation in the Bronx are very different. On the West Side, we are talking about taking a large piece of city-owned land, the last large tract of city-owned land in Lower Manhattan, and making it into a stadium. So what you're doing there is saying the best and highest use for this property is a stadium over all the competing issues of the borough. But in the Bronx, you have a situation where there is a stadium. That decision was made long ago. So we're not talking about taking land that could be for anything and making it into a stadium. We were talking about rebuilding a stadium right next door and where the original stadium is, turning that into a really terrific set of additional parkland, wonderfully programmed, lots of, you know, resources, ball field, tennis courts, et cetera, for folks from the neighborhood to use.
But why isn't this just a power imbalance between the poorest congressional district in America and the richest team in professional sports? If a business ever proposed to break Central Park in two so they could put their building in the middle of it and move the rest of Central Park somewhere else, you never stand for that, would you?
You know, one of the differences between this proposal on the West Side and also speaks to the question you're asking is on the West Side, every local elected official was in opposition to this proposal. In the Bronx, you had all of the local elected officials who represent the stadium and the borough president calling for this to happen once there were changes made. And the changes that were, I think, some of the most important ones were that the new parkland is going to be, when it's all said and done, much better parkland than what is there now. But in addition, a commitment has been made by the city and the team to make sure other parkland in the borough, particularly Mullally Playground, get rehabilitated.
Then there are these tax breaks that both the Yankees and the Mets are going to get for their private businesses. And you mentioned Borough President Carrion. Let me play you a clip of the borough president saying why he thought tax breaks and taxpayer expenses to support George Steinbrenner's new stadium are justified.
What the city does every time that it wants to keep somebody here, and it's done in New York and it's done all across this country, when you want to make your city attractive to a business, is you create a certain number of incentives, and we've done it. This is obviously nothing new.
So why isn't that corporate welfare in the case of the New York Yankees?
Well, you know, today, actually, as we speak, our finance committee is having an oversight hearing on the tax breaks for the Yankees and the Mets. So we have yet to, you know, act on them in the council, and there's lots of information being gathered as we speak. You know, the borough president is right in the fact that we do give tax breaks frequently to companies in this city to keep them here.
Do you think the Yankees are a serious flight risk?
You know, sports teams always seem to be a serious flight risk. I mean, they seem to move around. I have trouble keeping track of, you know, which city folks are from. You know, the Yankees have certainly threatened to move from the Bronx in the past. How serious that is, you know, I'm probably not the best judge of that. But
isn't that your job, especially today when the city council considers the funding elements? And then when you look at the Mets, as you probably know, part of the Mets' case for public subsidies is we're not threatening to leave New York.
Well,
and so then how do you fork over taxpayer money to that business?
Well, you know, I think that what I was going to say is also we need to look at tax. Part of the problem in some ways with the way we do tax breaks for businesses is that they're so reactive. It's always who threatens the loudest, the quickest, et cetera. That's probably not the best driving force to decide where and when we give out tax breaks. So I think flight risk, is it relevant? Absolutely. But then there also needs to be a relevant question about how many jobs are being provided, what type of jobs, how many of those jobs are going to local residents, how committed are the corporations to training programs? Because another concern is you want to make sure folks nearby residents aren't just coming in at entry-level jobs and never moving up. So I think flight is relevant, but it needs to be balanced against other factors as well.
We have a minute and a half left with New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn. One other thing. As you know, we're expecting at least tens of thousands of pro-immigrant protesters down by City Hall today. Do you plan to speak or attend?
I plan to both attend and to speak today. You know, I am a big, big supporter of the Kennedy-McCain approach to dealing with immigration right now in the
city. So real quick, I want to jump in because the city's policies are already pro-immigrant pretty much. This does have to do, as you were just saying, with all that's going on in Washington. But do you have any immigration items on your city council agenda?
Well, you know, we're right now we've been trying to do as much as we can in the council to try to push for things on the federal level. You know, one of the issues I worked on as health chair and we're going to continue to work on is really how to make sure that we're doing a better job connecting immigrants in New York City to health care. So many of the new immigrants in our city are uninsured and go without any health care. So my first priority really would be around health care and how we can expand health care access for immigrants in the city.
15 seconds. Do you like the new Massachusetts model of universal coverage?
We're actually going to be doing a lot of looking into that very, very closely. Our policy folks, it's funny, great minds think alike. Just last night I sent our policy director an email asking her to set up briefings and meetings with the folks in Massachusetts, because it's absolutely something I think we need to take a look at and figure out if there's a hybrid of it that could work here.
At 100 days on the job, New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn. Continued good luck.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.